And now for something completely different.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Let's do it.
Welcome to the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. With you till 3 on this Tuesday with plenty to get to over the next few hours. Coming up, I'll make the case for the best team in college football and the best team in the NFL. Plus, why, if you are a fan of one of the closest NFL teams, you should have been a little upset with what you saw last night on Monday Night Football. We'll circle back to the Gamecocks win on Saturday, why I'm not buying what Dan Mullen is selling about that game, and also what the Gamecocks should do at the quarterback position now moving forward. Plus, we'll get ready for college basketball, which begins in 3 hours. And we'll preview that coming up later on this hour. What will the college football playoff rankings look like tonight? We'll get to our Tuesday top 10. I'll let you know where I've been right, where I've been wrong. Plenty to do over the next few hours. You can join the conversation throughout the afternoon, 843-721-9500 to give us a call. You can always text the show, 843-608-1734. Get to us on Twitter at Morrow Middays, on Facebook at ESPN Charleston, via email, studio@kirkmanbroadcasting.com, or online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Click on our show page, and there you can leave a comment for the show. You can find the latest versions of the show podcasted right there, or you can even take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go by simply streaming us online at charlestonsportsradio.com. With you till 3 on this Tuesday, Joe's on the steel wheels. Joe, what's going on? How are you?
What's going on? It's a day after a Monday after a wild weekend of college football and other things. How about you?
Yeah, not too bad. We have the college football playoff rankings coming out again, the updated version, week 2. I think they're doing it during halftime of one of the basketball games tonight, so maybe a little different. But college basketball begins today. We have our first Citadel game tonight, the Citadel against Pittsburgh. More on that throughout the afternoon. We'll preview college basketball, get ready for this season, coming up in about 30 minutes when Patrick Stevens of the Washington Post will join us to break it all down. So we got a lot going on and a lot to do. Let me start with this. I touched on this yesterday. Now I want to dive in a little bit more. That the best teams in football, both college and the NFL, are teams that I think we're still struggling to buy into. Because oftentimes, we need to see something before we can believe in it. Which is why Saturday's win for the Gamecocks, I thought, was so important. You could sell me on a message or a mission or a plan, but eventually you have to start seeing something. It'd be like if somebody came to your door-to-door salesman, and they're trying to sell you something, they don't have the product they're selling. You sit there, you listen to them, and think, oh, this all sounds great, but I'd like to see it. Otherwise, it just seems like a scam. You don't trust the person that's trying to sell you something that you can't see beforehand. How often do you buy things sight unseen? Now, maybe online shopping, right? You buy a shirt, you get it in the mail, and you say, oh, this isn't what I expected, and you have to return it. People, maybe old school people, still prefer going to the store and actually being able to try it on in person, being able to see it, feel it, see the material. Is it a good shirt? Is it the right fit? What about these pants? Instead of just shopping online. Maybe I'm an outlier. It's why I really don't do any online shopping. Because usually I get something, it's not what I expected. It's not the right size, it's not how it looked, it's cheap material, I'm not pleased with the purchase, at least not clothes. Other things I'll buy online that, you know what you're going to get, a video game. But not something like a clothes or even shoes, it's the wrong size, doesn't fit. I like to be there in person, have it in my hands, feel it, so I know exactly what I'm getting. If someone's trying to sell me something, I want to see it. Right? When I go searching for a new car, I want to see the car. I don't just want to hear about it. Oh, we have this great new Ford. Oh, well, let me see the car first. instead of just telling me about it, and then I get into the thing, and it's exactly nothing what I was looking for. My point in all this being, when you look at the best teams in football, at the college level, it's Georgia. Georgia can be a hard program to trust because, A, they haven't won a national championship in 40 years despite their status and their prestige and the players they get, and B, because when they've gotten close in the past decade, they always seem to come up just a little bit short. They break your heart if you're a Georgia fan. Hard to trust them, hard to believe they're going to finally clear that hurdle. And in the NFL, when you look at the best teams in the league right now, you have the Tennessee Titans and the Arizona Cardinals. The Titans haven't been to a Super Bowl in over 20 years. The Cardinals got there, what, about 15 years ago at Kurt Warner? Maybe 10 years ago? It's been a while. Neither team has been that great in the past decade, and neither team really has won anything. You don't trust the Cardinals. Cliff Kingsbury, Kyler Murray. You don't trust Ryan Tannehill and Mike Vrabel. Combination of guys that have never won anything. You want to see it so that you can believe in it first instead of just anticipating what is going to happen, right? Seeing is one step towards not having to believe because it's evidence of existence. And it's kind of that proof that you need. So believing means you don't know, but you pretend to know. We sometimes would love to know for sure. And you'll wait around and see Georgia. You'll expect them to come up short every step of the way. Same with maybe the Titans, the Cardinals. So I figured I'm going to make the case. And let me put out the disclaimer first that I don't necessarily believe the Titans or the Cardinals are going to win a Super Bowl, but I'm at least going to make the case for why we should believe in all three of these teams. They're the best teams in their sport, Georgia at the college level, the Titans in the AFC, the Cardinals in the NFC. I think there's still a lot of people not buying into them. So I am going to defend them on their behalf and make the case for all three teams why they are the best in football and why you should trust that they will or could win the championship this year. Let's start at the college level with Georgia. That's supposed to be a gavel, by the way. I don't know how well that plays. I don't know how well that sounds, but that's supposed to be the gavel. We're acting like this is a courtroom, and I'm representing Georgia, and I'm making the case for why you should buy into Georgia as the best team in college football this year. For one, they are the clear favorite. I mean, they're the number one team in college football. They'll be the number one team in the playoff rankings tonight. And the big thing is that in a year of parity, where teams are down, teams are struggling, Georgia's the one consistent, that there really is no debate. There is no drama surrounding the number one spot. When they put out the college football playoff rankings tonight, and you know they're going to really amp it up, and they're going to drag it out, and they spend an hour to release these rankings, and then they talk about it, and we're going to talk about it here on the show for weeks, but you never talk about that number one spot, not until Georgia loses. Right now, there is no drama. Georgia's the clear number one, and then it's everybody else. And everybody else looked pretty poor this past weekend, while Georgia was just fine. And you could say, well, they played Missouri in a backup quarterback. Did Alabama, on paper, have a tough matchup with LSU? They were favored by 30, came down to the final possession. Right, Michigan State against unranked Purdue? Yeah, they lost by double digits. Georgia still took care of business. And they're doing it while in the SEC. This isn't the Pac-12. Right? This isn't a team in the Pac-12 running the table. They're doing it while playing in the toughest conference in all of football. They're the number one defense not only this season, but they have the number one defense statistically in terms of points allowed. It's been the best defense since 1992. That's how dominant they are. They're like a throwback to a few years ago when Nick Saban was winning national championships with Alabama when they were about their defense. Didn't have the most dynamic offense or playmaking quarterback, but it was good enough, and their defense was so stout that it didn't matter because you couldn't score on them anyways, and they won all sorts of championships. Meanwhile, for Georgia, their quarterback is getting better. Stetson Bennett has played a lot better in the past month, and he's actually one of just three quarterbacks in the country, averaging over 10 yards per pass attempt, which in my eyes is the most important statistic for a quarterback. Yeah, probably touchdown-interception ratio as well, but the yards per attempt shows you how efficient quarterbacks are, how maybe dynamic they can be, a lot of yards on fewer completions or pass attempts, and he's one of top three in Power 5 football. Not only that, but you have an even better option in JT Daniels if he can ever get on the field and take over that position, and the wide receivers are getting healthier. And then there are the metrics for Georgia. The national champion in the last 21 years has always been either top three in offensive or defensive scoring efficiency. That allows you to narrow down the national champion to six possibilities. Whoever are top three in offense and defense, the last 21 national champions have been in one of those two spots. And when you look at college football this year, on offense, the top three right now are actually Oklahoma's number one, Wake Forest number two, Ohio State number three. You could cross Wake Forest off the list. They're not even going to get a shot at making the playoff. Oklahoma, I don't know if they have the team to win this year, but we can keep them around. So you have Oklahoma and Ohio State. Looking on the defensive side of the football, top three, Georgia, Penn State, Clemson. Penn State and Clemson won't even get a chance to go to the playoff. Point being, seeing these metrics and looking at the history of this century, the national champion as of now will be either Oklahoma, Ohio State, or Georgia. So you have a 33% chance. Additionally, the other metric I'll give you is that each of the last 20 national champions were top 25 in total scoring efficiency the year prior, meaning no overnight success in college football. Usually the national champion is a team that was working their way there. Even LSU, when they surprised everybody 2 years ago, the metrics actually told you they were a top 25 team the year before. They were pretty good. And then the next year, they put it all together. For Georgia, they have the highest ranking of any champion contender from a year ago. This is not some sort of overnight success. They played in a big-time bowl game last year. They still have plenty of talent. It's not like Georgia came out of nowhere. National champions usually had to have a pretty darn good year the year prior, and then they take that next step. Georgia had a good year last year. They're even better this year. Maybe they're finally taking that next step. Georgia clearly is the number one team in college football, and the only concern is just the fact that, well, they haven't won anything in 40 years. Maybe this year they're good enough and the rest of the sport is bad enough that it doesn't matter, and Georgia will get it done. We move to the NFL, the AFC, and the Tennessee Titans. Titans have the toughest schedule in the league so far. They have played the toughest schedule in the NFL, and yet they have the best record in the AFC. They've won five straight games. And how about this? The Titans are 6-0 this year against playoff teams from a year ago. So you can look at certain teams and poke holes in the resume or the schedule. And granted, the Titans did lose to the Jets. That's a tough loss to swallow. But so too did the Bengals. And as I always say, the NFL's a week-to-week business. It's not college football. You know, where you in the NFL, you can overcome a bad loss. In college football, you lose a game like that, your season's over. Right? We will look at you and say, oh, but they lost to Bowling Green. No way are they a playoff team. In the NFL, it's obviously not like that. You can lose to the Jets, still go on and win a Super Bowl. And for the Titans, outside of that Jets game, 6-0 against playoff teams from a year ago. They've won five straight, doing it against some of the better teams in football. And Sunday night, they found a way to win without Derrick Henry, which is big. And they believe Henry could come back for the playoffs. So if you're the Titans, just get to the playoffs, and then you could get your horse back in Derrick Henry. And it should be pretty easy for them to get to the playoffs because the Titans actually have the easiest schedule the rest of the season now. They've played the hardest schedule up until this point, and they got through it with their best record. It'd be like if you went through your busiest time of the year at work and in the process, right, came out of it doing really well, and now you think like, oh, well, that was my toughest time. That's my busiest month of the year, and I came out doing great at work, started a new relationship. I got more money in the bank now than I did going through the month. I'm well rested. I even lost some weight. Like, you come out doing great after your busiest time at work, and now you look ahead and think, wow, things are only going to get easier. Now it's my easy time. This is my downtime at work. I got through the tough part. The Titans just went through the toughest schedule in football with the best record in the AFC. Now they have the easiest schedule moving forward. I mean, this team could finish something like 14-3. The toughest quarterbacks left on their schedule, either Mac Jones or Ben Roethlisberger. Not saying much. And they'll most likely be the number one seed in the AFC. They have a 69% chance of getting the number one seed. That's the highest percentage chance for a team to get the number one seed in the NFL this year. And this year, the number one seed is even more important because it's the only seed that gets a bye. The number two seed now has to play. So if you're the number one seed, you're the only one that gets a bye, and you get home field advantage. And if you look at the teams that have made it to the Super Bowl over the past decade, they are all number one or two seeds. They are all teams that had a bye. Right, it's been a while since we've had somebody play on Wild Card Weekend that made it to the Super Bowl. It's been about a decade. Right, so for the Titans to get that number one seed, it would be huge. And while Derrick Henry's out and that hurts the offense, the defense is getting better. They shut down the Rams on Sunday. They're able to get after the quarterback. It creates turnovers. The Titans have six interceptions over their last six games. They changed defensive coordinators this year, and they brought in more defensive starters, new starters, than any team in the league. Took a little while to get it going. But now this defense is improved. And lastly on the Titans, don't overlook the coach either. Mike Vrabel has been there for 4 years. He's had four winning seasons. First-time head coach, he's never had a losing season. And he's done it while using three different offensive coordinators. That is tough to do. He has to shuffle guys in and out. He's a defensive coach. He just has nothing to do with the offense. But he's done a good job hiring the right people to run the offense. And even with that change, they have been incredibly consistent over his 4 years. The Titans have the best record in the AFC right now, and the schedule tells you they should probably hold on to that. And if they get the number one seed, that's a huge advantage in the playoffs. In the NFC, it's the Arizona Cardinals. And they're one of just two offenses to average over 30 points per game this season. They've been incredibly consistent, even without Kyler Murray. Colt McCoy comes in, and they score over 30 points on the road on Sunday. And there's something to be said about that for the coach, for Cliff Kingsbury. That when you build something up, we see it a lot in college football. When you build something up to the point that it's more about like the system, you can just plug players in. That's what all the best college football teams accomplish. Because you turn over recruits every year, talented players, but it doesn't matter. Alabama can have a different quarterback every year. They're still going to turn them nowadays into a first-round draft pick. Right? It doesn't matter because it's about the system. It's about the coaches, the coaching that these players get. You're recruiting talented players anyway, so you can plug one in for another. And for the Cardinals, maybe they've gotten to that point where Kyler Murray is really good, but you take him out, you put in 35-year-old Colt McCoy, and he plays just as well because Cliff Kingsbury has built up this successful offense and system for the Cardinals that you can kind of just plug and play. Now, I wouldn't want to rely on McCoy long-term, right? But for a couple of weeks, maybe he could be all right for you. And the Cardinals have their bye coming up in 3 weeks, so a chance for Kyler Murray to get healthy. That's their biggest concern right now, the health of Kyler Murray. If he's injured and can't come back or he's not 100%, you got big issues if you're the Cardinals. But otherwise, they play in what was supposed to be the toughest division in football entering this year, and yet they still have the best record in football. And it's year three for Cliff Kingsbury. If you go back and you look, college football coaches always do the best in year three, the best ones, right? They take off by the third year. That's the big year they take a step forward. And you could say, well, this is the NFL. But Cliff Kingsbury is a college coach. He came from the college ranks. He's now coaching in the NFL for the first time. And here we are, year three. His team, his program, is taking that big step forward. And much like the Titans, the Cardinals have a 53% chance of landing the number one seed in the NFC. That's the highest percentage in that conference. Very important for the reasons I already laid out. If you're the number one seed, you're the only team that gets a bye. Everyone else has to play. You get home field advantage throughout, which is good for the Cardinals. You'd rather be with that offense indoors on the turf than have to go to Green Bay outdoors, right, in January or anywhere else in the NFC in a playoff game. You want people to come to your building. You get to run your offense on that quick turf inside, not have to worry about the weather. You get an extra week off. These two teams, and if you look at the Cardinals' schedule, they've kind of gotten through the tough part as well. Those two teams very well could be the number one seeds at the end of the year, and that could be a big advantage. Georgia, Titans, the Cardinals, the best records in each of their, let's say, leagues, right, college football, and then the AFC, the NFC, and plenty of reasons to be optimistic and believe in them even without seeing it first, because they really haven't shown us much in recent years to make us believe, oh, yeah, they can go win the championship this year. But they are showing it on the field this season. You just maybe have to believe in them. And that's just making my case for each of them. I'm not telling you to go bet on the Cardinals and the Titans being in the Super Bowl, but there's plenty of reasons to see why they're having the success that they have had. Coming up, let's circle back to Florida and South Carolina, because I'm not buying what Dan Mullen is selling about that game. We'll get to that next. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Wasted days and wasted nights, I have left for you behind. For you don't belong to me, your heart belongs to someone else.
Coming up, well, I'm not buying what Dan Mullen is selling about Saturday's loss to the Gamecocks. It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. The Morrow Midday Show is brought to you by Baker Roofing. They have been in business for over 100 years, and they're one of the largest, most recognized roofing contractors in the U.S. Baker Roofing provides residential and commercial roofing. And in 1915, they were founded on the promise of always good work. So give our friend Matt Johnson, general manager at Baker Roofing Charleston, a call, or head on over to bakerroofing.com for more information. You can check out their incredible history or see all the different roofing types that are available online at bakerroofing.com. Over 100 years of always good work, Baker Roofing, bringing you the Morrow Midday Show each and every day. You can always reach out to the show on Twitter at Morrow Middays. You can join the conversation by giving us a call, 843-721-7000. 9500, or you could send a message to the show by heading over to charlestonsportsradio.com, clicking on our show page, and there you can leave a comment for the show. A couple of messages came in yesterday that I did not see until we got off the air, so I want to circle back, and they both surround the Gamecocks' big win Saturday against Florida. The first one was about Jason Brown, who we discussed yesterday, and Jason Brown's eligibility. I had said I believed that this was his only year of eligibility. As a listener reached out and said his profile says he has 2 years of eligibility. He lost one due to COVID. You might want to confirm your previous comment. So then I said, okay, let me double check this. And sure enough, he does have 2 years of eligibility remaining, which is good for the Gamecocks. He should be the quarterback the rest of the way for South Carolina this year, and then you figure things out in some sort of competition next year. But I was getting into this yesterday, and then I realized when I was driving home, like, I don't know if I ever finished that thought. Right? Sometimes you start a sentence or a thought, and then you get taken in another direction. And I got into this, and then I think I derailed on something in regards to Dan Mullen. But I started to say this yesterday because Dan Mullen's been guilty of this as well, and we see it a lot in football. And I always, you know, will give the coaches some slack that they certainly know more about their personnel and team than you or I do. They recruit these kids. They're in the meetings. They're in practice. But oftentimes you see, like, a Lincoln Riley this year. You wonder, how come it took so long to put Caleb Williams in the game? Because he looks to be much better than Spencer Rattler. Dan Mullen's done it multiple times. Felipe Franks, Kyle Trask, this year even Emory Jones, and when healthy and not doing dance moves, Anthony Richardson. And for South Carolina, similar idea. You watch this team and you wonder, like, how come it took this long to give Jason Brown a chance? You're running Zeb Nolan back out there, who is overmatched, and he, in his case, doesn't have eligibility beyond this year. He has no future with this program, where Brown does, and he's athletic. You know, he's seemed, at least Saturday against Florida, more of a playmaker. Why don't you give somebody like that an opportunity? Why did it take this long to put him on the field? Because he certainly was the most impressive quarterback the Gamecocks have used this year, and even going back to last year, and it's just a one-game sample size. We don't want to overreact, but I thought Brown looked really good. Now, Shane Beamer has said about the starting quarterback, he said, I'm not going to be answering a ton of questions about that position. Obviously, Jason Brown was our best player of the game, but we're not there yet. And then we'll continue to say Zeb Nolan was healthy enough to practice. I don't get the fascination around Zeb Nolan. Now, all this could be gamesmanship. You don't want to tip your hand to Missouri or anybody else. You don't want to let anybody know who will be starting at the quarterback position. But when South Carolina goes to Missouri on Saturday and starts that game, Jason Brown better be the quarterback under center. Beamer also elaborated on how Brown is different now or better now than earlier this season and why maybe it took this long for him to get out there. And he said that Jason Brown looked better, did some things better in the game than what they've seen in practice, and went on to explain that his understanding of the offense and just the simple things was something that was better than maybe they anticipated. He said, we had a bad snap on a play where it was designed to be a run to the running back off the left side. He had enough savvy about himself to not panic, grab the ball, get his wits about him, and run the ball himself where the run was designed to go, and he hit it for a first down, which was really cool. He continued to say, mechanics at the line of scrimmage, something that has improved. A lot of the runs where we were lined up, we were running to a certain defender, a certain look or away from a certain coverage, and he was able to get us into the right place. Some of the things he did protection-wise at the line of scrimmage, those are probably the biggest things. And Beamer was talking about how Jason Brown looked better out there during the game than in practice. And all athletes, some are better practice players, some are better game players. Right? I grew up playing basketball, and there was one kid in particular that I played with in high school who in practice was incredible, best shooter on the team. But come game time, when you actually have a defense coming at you and you're not just getting open shots, right? He couldn't throw it in the ocean. In practice, if you just watched our practices, you would think he was the best player on the team. Like, this kid doesn't miss. Right? It's because, yeah, we're just running through our offense. Nobody's around him. He's got plenty of time to set up, right? To take his time, open shots. It's just shoot around. You would knock him down. In a game, it's a little bit different. You're tired. You have to go play defense. You have a defender on you. You're running around, right? You don't have as much free space as you do in an open practice. And he was like, you know, like the eighth, ninth man on the team in the games, but in practice, he was excellent. And vice versa, sometimes for guys who can either have those instincts or go a little off script, you don't get to see that so much in practice because practice is so structured. And then in a game, when things go haywire, you find out like, oh, this guy can handle a little adversity, a little chaos. Oh, this guy cannot. And I think we saw a little bit of that from Jason Brown. He should be the quarterback moving forward. Now, the other message that came in was about Dan Mullen, and I don't want to get into this now because we do have a guest coming up in a few moments. So we'll circle back to something Dan Mullen said about the game on Saturday, and a listener reached out mentioning it, and I'll get to that a little bit later on. Call that a tease. We'll do that a little later on this afternoon because I'm not buying what Dan Mullen was selling after that loss, embarrassing loss, to South Carolina on Saturday. We'll get to that coming up. For the Gamecocks, though, in the meantime, as I said, the quarterback position should be figured out for at least the rest of this season, and it should be Jason Brown. Now, he's only a two-star recruit, and, you know, he came from an FCS school, and it wasn't even like he was playing for one of the Dakotas. He's coming from the NEC in FCS football. So I can understand maybe some, you're maybe a little concerned or a little skittish about putting him out there. But from what we saw Saturday, I mean, he looked the best of the three quarterbacks. And he should be the guy moving forward. And I just wonder maybe why, with the issues they've had this year offensively and at the quarterback spot, how come we didn't see more of him before? Because he looked pretty darn good on Saturday. We'll get to Dan Mullen a little bit later on. But we also have college basketball beginning in just 2.5 hours. College basketball tips off at 3 p.m. today when we get off the air. We got a Citadel opening game tonight against Pittsburgh. Got a lot going on. Looking forward to it. So when we come back, we'll preview the upcoming college basketball season with Patrick Stevens of the Washington Post when we come back. It's the Moore Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
It's the Moore Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. And we got college basketball starting today, tipping off in 2.5 hours. Hence the joiner, the rejoin song. And we have Citadel basketball tonight with Pittsburgh over on the city. Coverage begins at 6:30 for the season opener. Tip off at 7 o'clock for that one on our sister station, 102.1 FM, or, of course, online. Just head over to thecitycharleston.com or get the app or tune in radio. Many ways to listen to the game from anywhere in the world this evening. 7 o'clock tip, the Citadel and Pittsburgh. Joining us now to break down what to expect from this college basketball season is Patrick Stevens of the Washington Post. Get to him on Twitter at Discourse, but it's D1 and then Scores. Patrick is with us now. Good afternoon, Patrick. How are you?
I am well. How are you? Are we going to talk some SoCon hoops right now?
Hey, if you want, I'm all for it. Let's start there then. Since you teed it up, who do you expect to be the front runner in the Southern Conference this year?
Well, I'll tell you what. I mean, I feel like that league right now, you know, first of all, what a great league it's been for the most part here over the last 3 or 4 seasons. And people don't necessarily give it as much attention. But you think about some of the Wofford teams that were in there and that East Tennessee State team, which I feel like if we're sitting there and coming up with a list of teams that got robbed by the pandemic, East Tennessee State from a couple years back is one of them that stands out. But I feel like Chattanooga is kind of a slight favorite there, which with Furman very much in the mix. And I actually did a couple of the SoCon teams for Blue Ribbon Yearbook this year, Mercer, and Samford, and I think that Mercer team has a lot coming back that I think can really make themselves a bit of a factor in the league. But I'd lean towards Chattanooga, at least at this stage.
Yeah, it has been a good conference, and I do love the Blue Ribbon Yearbook. It's a necessary reading every college basketball season. Let's talk about, you know, for the Citadel, they start tonight with Pittsburgh. They also get to go to Duke in a couple weeks. I'm looking forward to heading over there for Coach K's final year. I imagine as we start the college basketball season today, I imagine the biggest storyline this year is going to be the farewell tour for Coach K with Duke, right?
Yeah, I feel like that's going to dominate so much. I mean, already, you know, Duke is one of those programs that they just happen to get mentioned a ton over and over and over again, no matter what. It's funny, last year, like maybe on Thursday or so of selection week, of conference tournament week, somebody asked me, well, what's the biggest story going to be come Selection Sunday? And I said, well, the answer is whether Duke gets in or not. And then, of course, you know, they had the positive COVID test and had to withdraw from the ACC tournament. And that kind of went away. But it's going to be an even bigger deal. I mean, this might be a year where there's even more attention on Duke than there was the Zion Williamson. And it's going to be the same drumbeat. You know, it's going to be how is Mike Krzyzewski received in every last venue. This is probably his last trip to Madison Square Garden tonight. against Kentucky. You know, he'll have a last trip to Carolina. He'll have a last game at Cameron, a last ACC tournament. And really, up until Duke gets eliminated or wins the national title, whatever it is, I think that's going to be the biggest story of this season, is sort of that last run for Mike Krzyzewski at Duke. Can he add to that five national titles?
Yeah, of course, you know, the focus will be on him, but the team itself, which you kind of alluded to, I know a lot of people believe they will be the best team in the ACC this year, so what should expectations be from the actual team itself when we focus on the basketball?
Well, they might have the best freshman in the country. You know, stop me if you've heard that one before.
Right.
But Paulo Vantero, 6'11 or so, really skilled big guy, I think has a chance to be one of, if not the best player in the ACC this season. You know, you got some guys that are back. Mark Williams, who came on in the last third of last season after Jalen Johnson departed, and was really a huge factor for them starting to play better towards the end of the season. A 7-footer, great rim protector. I think he's going to be really much a major factor for them. And in the backcourt, you got Jeremy Roach back for another year. And so you kind of look at that, and they got Wendell Moore Jr. back. I like the Blue Devils a fair bit. I don't know if they win the ACC. I remain committed to the idea that Florida State is perennially underrated, and I wouldn't be shocked if the cast of thousands down in Tallahassee finds a way to win a conference title.
Sticking in that conference, what should we expect from Hubert Davis in his first year with UNC this year?
It's really interesting to me, you know, with some of the guys that they have. You overall kind of look at it, and you got guys that have played for him when he was an assistant. Now, you know, do they have as large a role, or do they have bigger roles now that he's the head coach? I mean, I think Armando Bacot is the guy that's back in the front court that everybody knows about. And Caleb Love, I think, will be in for a better sophomore year than he had a freshman year. A couple other names to be aware of. Brady Manick, the Oklahoma transfer, and Dawson Garcia, the Marquette transfer, two immediate plug-and-play guys for the Tar Heels. I think they'll be pretty good. I don't know if they'll be top 10 good, but it would not surprise me at all if by the end of the season we're looking at a team that's a 3 or a 4 or a 5 seed in the NCAA tournament.
Last year was the first time in almost, I think it was almost 50 years, the ACC didn't have a top 3 seed in the bracket. Just in general, do you think the ACC, because, you know, historically that is the conference for college basketball, do you think just in general this will be a better ACC this year than maybe what we saw a year ago?
I think the top half of the league will probably be better. I think Duke will obviously be better. I think Louisville is going to be a bit better. I think Florida State's going to again be pretty good. Virginia will again be pretty good. I think Virginia Tech will be probably a little bit better. You know, they have you know, got the Wofford reunion thing going there with Kaveh Aluma and now Storm Murphy joining Mike Young up there in Blacksburg. So there's some pretty good teams in that mix. You know, Duke, Carolina, Virginia Tech, Florida State, Louisville, Syracuse, I think. With all the Boeheims together, you know, now it's Jimmy and Buddy now playing for Coach Jim Boeheim up there. So that I think is 7 really solid teams. And then you get to Notre Dame, who I think will be an improved team. And from there's some question marks. So I think the top half of the league has a chance to be pretty darn good. I don't know what to make of maybe that bottom 5 or 6 teams. There's a lot of question marks for a lot of those other teams right now.
Talking with Patrick Stevens from the Washington Post about college basketball, which tips off today. Yeah, one of those teams I have to ask you about here in the state of South Carolina, mm-hmm. of course, is Clemson. What should we expect? They made it to the tournament last year. Then they lost, you know, their best player. What should we expect from Clemson this year?
Yeah, it's they're a fascinating team because I always feel like, you know, you look at their roster in the offseason, you go, well, they have this and they have that. Maybe they don't have everything that they need. And they find a way to be more competitive than anybody ever expects them. So, you know, when I see them picked like 10th or 11th or so, that makes me think they're probably going to finish somewhere in that 7, 8, 9 range when all is said and done. So I think one of the keys for them is going to be some of those older guards now, Alamir Dawes and Nick Honor, being able to take some steps forward. They need some help, up front, obviously, now that Amir Sims is gone. Nazba Hannon from Youngstown State is the obvious guy that they're going to ask to step in and play a little bit larger role. But ultimately, you know, I expect them to be plenty competitive. Brad Brownell does a really good job with them, and it would not stun me to see them at least on the periphery of the NCAA tournament discussion by the time we get to the end of the season.
And the other team I want to ask you about in the ACC, because I'll be seeing them tonight for the Citadel in Pittsburgh. I know they were picked to finish 2nd from the bottom in the ACC, but selfishly, let me ask you about Pittsburgh. What should I expect, or Citadel fans expect to see from them tonight and throughout this year?
Well, it's worth noting that Pittsburgh was picked second to the bottom, and that was before arguably their best player suffered a torn ACL in their exhibition game, Nike Sabande. And another one of their good players, a likely starter, Ithiel Horton, was arrested over the weekend. And is suspended indefinitely. So if there's ever a time to get the Panthers, who already were kind of in flux to start with, it is now as they try to figure out what their lineup is going to be kind of on the fly. I mean, it's going to look a lot different even than it did a week ago when they played an exhibition game. So I think this is an opportunity for the Citadel and a few other teams here in the first couple weeks of the season to be able to pick off an ACC team. I don't know if Pitt's going to be quite as bad as they were in the second Kevin Stallings year when they went 0 for the ACC. But this is not a team I don't think that has a particularly high ceiling this year.
Before we let you go, talking with Patrick Stevens, let me try to fit in a few more with you. And moving over to the SEC, because we also have the Gamecocks here in the state.
Mm-hmm.
So when you look at the SEC, let's first focus on South Carolina. I'll be frank. I was surprised they brought Frank Martin back. We've had him on the show. I like him. I thought it was time for a change, though. What do you expect for South Carolina this year in the SEC?
Yeah, last year, you know, first off, I think, you know, obviously when you look at Frank Martin's resume, there's the Final Four, which is fantastic. And then there's a lot of competitive seasons that just didn't quite get it done in the end in terms of getting an NCAA tournament berth. So it's an interesting resume, to say the least, for him. You know, I feel like for the Gamecocks, you know, there's the SEC might be the best league, at least in the top half this season. When you look at Kentucky, Tennessee, Alabama, Auburn, Mississippi State, Arkansas, LSU, I mean, that's a lot of good teams. And that's before we even talk about Kermit Davis at Ole Miss, and Florida's pretty consistent. I don't know if I'm particularly bullish on the Gamecocks being able to rise up much beyond, you know, maybe a 10th, 11th in the conference this season. And at that point, you know, it seems reasonable to think that might be a conversation in terms of a coaching change. I do say this. I can imagine a scenario where Frank Martin has another job somewhere down the road and does a fabulous job. I think he's an excellent coach with a great perspective. But, you know, time is probably – it'll have been 5 years since that Final Four run. And you don't see too many power conference coaches get five consecutive years without a tournament berth and be able to hang on.
Right. No, I agree with you. Looking at the SEC, Kentucky obviously had a losing season last year, but when you think SEC, you usually begin with Kentucky. Should we expect them to be back at the top of that conference this year?
I think that they'll be back to being relevant at the very least. I mean, I think adding Kellen Grady from Davidson was a huge move for them, and they were really active on the transfer wire. Grady, a guy that scored 2,000 points, and if you play for Davidson, that pretty much automatically means you're a good shooter. So I think he's going to be a guy that's able to help them out a fair bit. You know, C.J. Frederick, really a gunner, a guy that played a lot at Iowa, another three-point shooter. I think he's going to help them out a ton. And ultimately, I think that they're a team that will be back in that top 10 to 15 mix, maybe even a little better. The teams I like in that, like, I really like Tennessee. I really, really like Alabama. I feel like Nate Oates has sort of mastered the massaging the transfer portal about as well as anybody else. And I think Mississippi State's a team that has a chance to really surprise people. They were also active in the transfer portal this year. DJ Jeffries from Memphis was an addition. Rocket Watts from Michigan State. Garrison Brooks, who way back when, I know everybody forgets about it, he was actually the ACC preseason player of the year last year. Didn't work out all that great overall for him in terms of overall stats, but he'll have a chance to wrap up his career in Starkville. And I think that's a team that we might see sneak into the top four or so in the league when all is said and done.
We'll let you get out of here on this. Let me squeeze two questions into one before we let you go. Talking with Patrick Stevens from the Washington Post. Big picture stuff, maybe hard to answer right now, but give me, I guess, your favorite in college basketball this year to go try to win it all. And then also, like, a sleeper team that you don't think enough people are focusing on that could be really good this year.
Favorite, I'm going to go ahead and give that nod to Gonzaga. You know, it's one of those things where if you keep knocking on the door and have a really good team enough, eventually you're going to break through. You know, it happened to Virginia a couple years back. You know, Baylor had some pretty good teams and broke through last year. You think about Villanova had been really good for a couple years, and then they get two titles in 3 years. You know, Gonzaga is so consistently good. They've got Drew Timmy back. They've got Andrew Nembhard at guard. They've got another really good freshman in Chet Holmgren. You know, and I feel like that tough schedule early on, they're playing just about everybody under the sun the first month or so of the season. I think they'll be toughened up, and we'll have a good sense of what they are. And it feels like, I don't want to say it's a now or never deal, but it does feel like things set up pretty well for them. We said that last year as well. a team that's maybe a little under the radar, and maybe not necessarily a national title contender, but a team I think can at least make it to the second weekend, is St. Bonaventure. Five starters back from a team that won the Atlantic 10, won the Atlantic 10 tournament, and has been built, it's been built for this year the whole time. You go back a couple seasons, and Mark Schmidt was playing a lot of young guys. You know, they've won 10-plus games in the A-10 seven consecutive years, and that is really, really hard to do at a school that's got a little bit of a remote location in western New York. And Mark Schmidt is really one of the sorcerers of college basketball, having built that thing up with the Bonnies, and I think that's a team that's primed to be able to make a multi-round run.
He's Patrick Stevens. He covers college sports for the Washington Post. Follow him on Twitter at Discourse, but it's D1 Scores. Patrick, phenomenal stuff. We'll have to do it again. Appreciate all the time and the insight, and enjoy the tip-off today.
Awesome. Thanks so much for having me.
Hey, pleasure's all ours. Appreciate it. Patrick Stevens breaking it all down in college basketball. And I had a handful of other things I wanted to get to him with him as well. So much going on as we tip off college basketball today. Of course, the big story this year will be Coach K. And then more locally, you see if Clemson can compete in the ACC and get back to a tournament. And in the SEC, I do agree with Patrick. I think Frank Martin is coaching for his job this year, and he better make the tournament if he wants to hang around. But I don't have high hopes for either one of those programs in those conferences. I think the ACC, like Patrick said, will be certainly improved this year. It was such a down year last year. Kentucky won't have a losing season again. They won a third of their games last year, so the SEC will be a little bit better at the top as well. Doesn't make it easier on Clemson or South Carolina. And I really don't expect a whole lot from either one. For Clemson, they made the tournament last year, so maybe Brunell gets a little bit of a buffer zone here. He gets a little bit of a window. But for Frank Martin and the Gamecocks, you got to have some sort of postseason, really March Madness. I don't care if you go to the NIT. That's not good enough for me. You got to put this team in March Madness finally. Get to the tournament if you're South Carolina and be competitive in the SEC. We'll talk more about college basketball throughout the afternoon and wrap up Hour 1 when we return. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Say I'm crazy, doing what I'm doing. Well, they give me all kinds of warnings.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. I always love the song from John Lennon. Maybe you could apply it to those, you know, who try to just talk sports for a living. They say, what are you doing? You're crazy. Get to be a grown child for my life, talk sports for a living. Broadcast is tonight, 7 o'clock tip, coverage at 6:30 against Pittsburgh. The Citadel's only a 9-point underdog at Pittsburgh, an ACC team. I'm very interested to see how this goes tonight. Pitt, you just heard last segment from Patrick Stevens of the Washington Post. Appreciate him joining us. If you ever miss anything from the show, catch it on demand. ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcast. They were picked to finish 14 out of 15 teams, and as Patrick laid out, they're down now two starters just from the last couple of weeks. So they're already expected to not be very good. They've gotten worse since. They went 2-12 to end last year, lost their best player from last year's team. They only have one returning starter. He's now unavailable. He's suspended indefinitely. So we'll see about the Citadel. Right, you catch a team early. The Bulldogs come out shooting hot maybe tonight. We'll see if they could pull off some sort of upset against an ACC team. Only a 9-point underdog. And we're talking basketball here, not football. Right, that's three possessions for a team like the Citadel. That's not bad. Maybe we have a close, competitive, very interesting game, maybe even an upset. I'll have it for you over on the city with coverage beginning at 6:30. More on that coming up in a little bit. You can always join the conversation, 843-721-9500. Let's go to the phone. Super Dave is with us. Dave, what's going on? How are you?
So I hope you do better at Citadel basketball, because a lot of these announcers, it's so fast to keep up when you can't see it go by sound. And, you know, the players are brand new and all, so it's hard when they just say the last name. That one has the ball to that one has the ball back to that one has the ball. And then they hit the score, you know. So it's kind of hard to keep up with it. You know, especially on TV.
Well, you're just going to have to tune in, and then you can report back and let me know how good of a job or bad of a job I do. But hopefully,
sure.
Hopefully I'm up to your standards.
So 6:30, so so it's a whole day. Like, starts 4:30, right?
Coverage begins at 6:30. The game starts at 7 over on the city, our sister
station. Right, but I'm saying overall game.
Oh, 3 o'clock.
Radio start at 4:30.
Yeah, I don't know about, I don't know for us, but just in general, 3 o'clock, you could turn the TV on, watch some college basketball today starting at 3.
That's cool. The only bad thing I hate about it is going to mess up your all show, Bob's show. You never know when you all go to work.
Yeah,
you know?
I don't even know what the schedule is. Are the Gamecocks, look into that crystal ball of yours, Super Dave. Will the Gamecocks make it to the NCAA tournament this year in basketball?
Frank Martin has a motivator to do that. I say he's going to have a great season. I'm a Frank Martin fan. I barred him when he had the COVID and all that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that he'll go to March Madness this year. May not be the Final Four, but it may be he could make at least the beginning of the tournament.
All right. He better hope so. You heard it from Super Dave himself predicting a tournament appearance for the Gamecocks this year.
So he says the Cocks will go dancing.
That's right. Watch it. This is a family show. Frank Martin, by the way, he better make it to the tournament. He's the first coach. I had done this research last year, but the first coach with fewer than two tournament appearances to get a 10th year for an SEC school since Bill Lynn at Auburn 50 years ago. There really isn't a precedent for this, for a guy who hasn't made it to the tournament and still get to a 10th season. He better make it this year. Frank Martin, coaching for his job. Hour two next. It's the Moore Midday Show on ESPN Radio.